Religious liberty is an issue I think that we as Christians need to get out in front of.
Mark Hemingway talking about his joint presentation at the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Whether it's willful or simple ignorance, the media have badly misrepresented this issue. It is also vital that all Americans understand just how foundational religious liberty and freedom of conscience are to the preservation of all American freedoms. And this is something that even those Americans who aren't religious should understand and agree with. I also happen to believe that we as Lutherans, with our understanding of Two Kingdoms theology, are in an excellent position to be the explainers and ambassadors of this issue.
You can meet and hear Mark and Molly Hemingway making the case for religious liberty at the Fall Making the Case Conference Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Registration is $120. Child care is free. Find out more and register at IssuesETC.org or call 618-223-8385.
In America, we don't worship government. We worship God.
Often now with the mandates, I'm just supposed to prescribe something. I'm just supposed to be a Coke dispenser. Someone comes up to me and they press Diet Coke and I'm just supposed to give them a Diet Coke.
Are we going to try to figure out how to align the church with the culture and continue to cooperate in ways that make everybody happy? Or are we going to say, no, the time has come. We need to recognize we can't do that without compromising our very confession.
To talk of justification as actually being made righteous is not, in fact, the traditional confessional way Lutherans speak of justification.
Lutherans at the Old Latin School in Lutherstadt Wittenberg love Issues Etc.
I've often wondered if we knew then what we know today, what would be different? If it was common knowledge, as it is today, that the unborn, the life in the womb, is in fact not just a clump of cells or a blob of cells or a potential human being, but in fact a developing human being, someone, yes, an actual person there in the womb. We know this today, not only in terms of the genetics, but also in terms of the ethics. This is something that, well, a lot of people deny, but it doesn't mean it isn't there to be known. And we can peer into the womb with ever greater sophistication and see that human being there developing. It's done every day as women prepare to give birth to their children. It's also sadly done every day as women prepare to terminate the lives of their children in abortion. So if we knew then, back in 1972, 73, what we know now about life in the womb, could Roe v. Wade, could any credible case have been made for Roe v. Wade? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Friday afternoon, October the 20th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Stephen Aden is going to join us first from Americans United for Life. We're going to be talking about ultrasound technology and pro-choice arguments. A little bit later, Dr. Cameron McKenzie joins us for our ongoing series on the Reformation today. The Reformation in England, it's kind of a complicated combination of politics and royal intrigue and church matters. We'll be talking with Dr. Larry Rasht in part 3 of our series with him on the Conservative Reformation about the role of baptism in the Reformation. Then we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. It's a simple game we like to play with our listeners. We'll play 4 soundbites, then you vote by giving us a call, sending us an email, a tweet, or going to our Facebook fan page and voting there for Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. Joining us to talk about ultrasound technology and pro-choice arguments, Steve Aden. He's Chief Legal Officer and General Counsel of Americans United for Life, author of a recent column for The Federalist titled, Americans Increasingly Understand That Pro-Abortion Arguments Are Based on Ignorance. Steve, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you, Todd. It's very good to be here.
Given what we know and what we can now see and measure about human development today, could the case for Roe v. Wade be made credibly either in the Supreme Court or with the American public?
Well, Todd, the first thing we need to recognize is that there was no case the first time around in 1973. The Supreme Court heard Roe versus Wade twice because it had a change in personnel, once in 71 and once in 72, resulting in the 1973 decision, but it was made on virtually no record. There was an unsigned affidavit from Jane Roe. We know it was Norma McCorvey who became a pro-life activist when she realized how she'd been used. And that's about it. And some very bad arguments in Friend of the Court briefing by the left pro-abortion lobby. What really happened was that Justice Harry Blackmun, who was the driving force behind Roe versus Wade and the principal author, recognized an opportunity that this procedural case presented on this virtually non-existent record, and he rammed through the so-called fundamental right to life through the Supreme Court. All of that is told in Abuse of Discretion, the outstanding book by my colleague at AUL, Clark Forsyth. But when I wrote this article, I meant to argue that even since Roe versus Wade in 1973, we have come to understand infinitely better what's going on in the womb, because back then, ultrasound technology existed, but it wasn't in common usage. We didn't know what we didn't know about life in the womb. And if we had known then what we know now, I would hope and pray that many more Americans and hopefully some members of the Supreme Court would be engaged in this issue and recognize that this is a human being we're talking about. They're on the continuum from conception to birth. There is no stopping point, no line of demarcation. It's one continuous progression in miraculous fashion of the development of a human person. And I only wish that we had known then what we know now, but we know that now. And that's one of the main reasons, I think, that abortion is becoming more and more and more unpopular, because this generation, especially the millennial generation, is called the most pro-life generation, includes my six children. You can't tell them that it's not a human being in the womb, because they grew up seeing the ultrasounds of their brothers and sisters and friends, and they know better. That's what I was trying to write about.
To what degree, then, does the abortion industry depend on perpetuating that ignorance, and how long are they going to continue to sound credible to the American public when they use tired phrases that are based in really kind of, we might even say, kind of pre-industrial mythologies about human development?
Yeah. Well, I haven't heard the phrase blob of tissue or blob of cells lately, and that's a good start, because they know that people know better. What they're switching to, unfortunately, is the argument that, well, you know, it may be a human embryo or a human fetus, but the woman's rights control, the woman's ability to have a fulfilled and happy life is at risk if she is forced to have this baby. All of that is untrue. It's very false, but that's their new narrative. They accept the humanity of the unborn infant, but they say simply the mother's rights prevail. And I think that that's an untenable argument. I think most people would agree with that, with the fact that it's untenable.
It's a major shift in their argument, because they can no longer say nothing dies or no one is being killed here. They're simply now shifting their argument to one person's rights prevailing over another. When you say it's untenable, do you mean that in a genuinely legal sense?
I mean that I don't think in the long run they'll be able to hold on to it, because the facts are to the contrary. So two federal courts have been asked to evaluate whether full informed consent requirements are truthful. The law says that when you require full informed consent by a woman considering abortion, the statements have to be true. And so two courts have considered whether the informed consent requirement that a woman be told that she's bearing a whole independent human life from conception is true or not. And both courts have said that it is. One was a circuit court of appeals, the 8th Circuit Court of Appeals, and the other was a federal trial court in Indiana. And the latter one, they didn't even appeal to the Court of Appeals because they knew they'd lose. The science is established. Human life begins at conception. That's a reality that the abortion industry doesn't want to address, but is being forced to address more and more, and that's a very good thing.
Talk about Justice Anthony Kennedy's opinion in Gonzales versus Carhart that you write about, and what does it tell us?
Well, Justice Anthony Kennedy, as you know, is regarded as the swing vote on abortion and many issues in the Supreme Court. He's right in the middle of the court, and he provided the vote to uphold the constitutionality of the federal Partial Birth Abortion Ban Act in that case you're referring to, Gonzales versus Carhart, in 2007. And he had dissented in a similar case 7 years before, where a state ban on partial birth abortion had been struck down as unconstitutional. He dissented then and provided a rather harrowing description of the partial birth abortion procedure, whereby a baby is delivered all the way, whole body delivered except for the head, and then a pair of scissors is jammed into the skull and a vacuum used to suck out the baby's brains just before it's delivered dead. The partial birth abortion procedure was developed by Martin Haskell for one reason, to guarantee a dead baby, because it's the abortionist's worst nightmare to have an abortion fail and to have a living human being delivered. So Justice Kennedy writes in Gonzales versus Carhart, where he has a chance to approve the constitutionality of a federal partial birth abortion ban in Gonzales, and that procedure remains criminal in all 50 states because of the federal ban in Gonzales. He says he describes again the partial birth abortion procedure, and he says whether to have an abortion requires a difficult and painful moral decision. It is self-evident that a mother who comes to regret her choice to abort must struggle with grief more anguished and sorrow more profound when she learns only after the event what she once did not know, that she allowed a doctor to pierce the skull and vacuum the fast-developing brain of her unborn child, a child assuming the human form. Pretty stirring words, and it really depends on looking at the abortion procedure and seeing it for what it really is. Aside from euphemisms, aside from reductions, aside from metaphors, and it's ugly. And I think that's why many, many more people are turning away from abortion and turning to the pro-life position.
I think what I fear in this is that the following position being argued, and I don't know if I have reason to or not, but we some time back talked with Hadley Arkus, the author of the Born Alive Infants Protection Act, and he said that in his interactions with college students, he would find students who were readily willing to say, yes, abortion is infanticide. It is. But it's a necessary infanticide. What do you think about the argument? What do you think about that state of affairs, given the fact that people are recognizing life in the womb, but somehow still opting for what the necessary evil of abortion?
Well, my good friend, Professor Arkus, is extremely erudite and knowledgeable about this issue. And what he's pointing out, I think, is that young people, the minority that are not pro-life now, accept what they regard as infanticide because they think it's necessary. They have bought the lie by big abortion that abortion is necessary for a woman to have equality in the marketplace, elsewhere. That is a lie, an argument that's been asserted by members of the Supreme Court, including Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, is very fond of the argument, but it's untrue, once again. When I think of young people like that, I think that, once more, they're only half understanding the issue and the practice of abortion. And I wish that, like my friend Abby Johnson, they had seen, she was a Planned Parenthood worker who saw an abortion committed on an ultrasound machine, actually saw it in process. And as a result, she walked out of her Planned Parenthood facility and into the pro-life center across the street and said, I cannot do this anymore. So that's why I'm shouting from the housetops, stop, look, think about what abortion really is and does, because I think that when young people do that, they will agree that it's an ugly thing, and we can live without it. Women deserve better.
The critique that Arkus has for Ginsburg's argument there is that there's no limiting principle on such an idea. If one can assert the rights of one human being over another based upon, in this case, development or location in the womb, there's really nothing to limit someone from finding a good reason, quote unquote, a good reason to assert their rights over anyone else. What's the point there, and why should we be deeply concerned about that slippery slope?
The point Hadley is making is correct. It's another variant on the argument that might makes right. So look at a family who have a loved one toward the end of their life who's been diagnosed terminal, whose medical care is very expensive, very draining. Don't their rights override hers? Don't they have a right to write an order to not resuscitate or to rush her to the exit with assisted suicide? Don't their rights outweigh hers? Because after all, her life is keeping them from enjoying theirs. It's the same exact argument. If you see that the abortion lobby elides the first and most critical question, is it a human life? If it's a human life, the answer controls all other questions. Because if it's a human life, there is no alternative but to support and encourage and nurture it. There is no situation in which we, as a society, say human rights are equal, all people have human rights except for X people. We went beyond that, way beyond that, thank God, in the Civil War and Reconstruction, hopefully in the fight for equal rights between the genders. So once again, you have to answer the first and basic question. And once you do, I think you'll see that human life, human rights are paramount, and that they should be respected, protected on behalf of all human beings, including those in the womb.
Finally then, Steve, are we, given the lifting of the veil of ignorance, are we genuinely, at least at the threshold of the path to making abortion unthinkable in America?
Yeah, I think we are, for several reasons. First of all, as I said, more and more people understand what abortion really is and does, thanks to ultrasound technology and science. But also, more and more people understand that our jurisprudence, the laws that our legislators and our courts articulate, must be based on principle, must be based on first things, and not on the predilections or the desires of a particular activist judge. So I think that culturally there's been a big shift and much more of a willingness to accept life in the womb as a gift. But I think in the legal culture, there is a strong push for principled jurists, like the recent appointment to the U.S. Supreme Court, Neil Gorsuch, or the late Justice Antonin Scalia, people who realize that the Constitution from which we get our rights is not subject to a vote. It's not subject to a poll of which rights and privileges we like and which we don't like. That all of the people crafted the document. It stands for the rights of all the people. And nowhere in that document does it talk about a right to kill human beings in the womb. So I think that as particularly this administration appoints more and more principled jurists, as it has committed itself to do, and as its first slate of nominees reflects, the federal judiciary will increasingly reflect the understanding that the Constitution is to be taken seriously, and we're not to find rights emanating from the penumbra among the different components of the Bill of Rights, which is what the court said in Roe. We don't really know where it is, they said, but the right of abortion is there somewhere emanating from the penumbra between selected rights. That's ridiculous. It's gobbledygook. And I think it's time we recognize that.
Steve Aden is Chief Legal Officer and General Counsel of Americans United for Life. He's author of a recent column for The Federalist titled Americans Increasingly Understand That Pro-Abortion Arguments are based on ignorance. You'll find a link to this column and to Americans United for Life at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Steve, thank you very much and keep up the good work.
My pleasure, Todd. Thank you, too.
When we come back on this Friday afternoon, we're going to continue a series, a nine-part series. We'll be in part six on the Reformation today. We will go to Great Britain, to the English Reformation. Dr. Cameron McKenzie, author of The Issues, Etc., Book of the Month for October, The Reformation, will be our guest. Man I've never seen, dreaming like a lonely child. I know your brothers and your sister and your mother too. Man, I wish you could see them too.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the language of medicine and law today. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Concordia Publishing House's annual warehouse sale is both online and in store. Take advantage of discounted prices on many of the items you hear promoted on Issues, Etc. November 2nd through the 6th. You'll find major cost savings on books, music, Bibles, educational resources, and more. Concordia Publishing House's Fall Warehouse Sale, cph.org, and 3558 South Jefferson in St. Louis.
Recently graduated from high school or college and looking for a chance to serve a community in need while sharing the good news of Jesus Christ? Lutheran Young Adult Corps may be for you. Lutheran Young Adult Corps provides opportunities for long-term, full-time service for 10 weeks through the summer or 10 months over the school year in places like St. Louis, Philadelphia, and Boston. Find out more about Lutheran Young Adult Corps by finding us online at lcms.org/YACORPS or on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Lutheran YA Corps.